If you are a regular listener to our podcast, the phrase powerful partnership is one you hear regularly. What's behind those two words and why are they paired together and why are they so important? We have a great story to share and an invitation for you. Join us in promoting a new value set, collaboration, cooperation, and community in this new year and beyond. And who can believe that this is the first week of the new year? So happy new year, everybody. Hey, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Impact Earth. And thanks for joining us and for being a part of our world. From where I sit, this podcast is about powerful partnerships, how to build them, why they matter, and why I believe they are a critical path forward in this new year and beyond. They are how change happens, how shifts are made, how new paradigms are created. It all starts with a vision, but the devil is in the detail when it comes to making that vision become a reality. I honestly can't think of a person who exemplifies that better than our guest today. You know, there's a part of me that thinks this man sits around thinking about big, bold solutions to our climate reality, and then gets lots of other people excited about it, and away we go. I'm one of those people. It is both my honor and pleasure and privilege to introduce to you Mike Peel. He is the Southern Arizona Director for Local First, which has the honor of being the largest member organization in the state of Arizona. He also wears the hat of Statewide Sustainability Director for Local First Arizona. But you know what? They're just titles, and Mike is so much more than a title. He's a visionary. He is that person who walks the walk when it comes to all things climate change and how that impacts human beings and entire communities. He is a dedicated localist and truly embraces his role as someone working relentlessly on putting together creative community partnerships that have measurable impact and that can easily be scaled for national platforms. That's why we decided to make this a national show, an Impact Earth show, because these are things that can be replicated and implemented in any place around the country. You just have to have a Mike Peel and other people like him to make it happen. So please join me in welcoming my good friend and champion for the planet, Mike Peel. Mike, I'm so excited that we finally get to do this.
I am too. Thank you for the opportunity.
So we talked about the timing for a show like this because we have been involved in a partnership building for months because good stuff takes time. And I'm saying stuff because I'm on the air, but really good stuff takes time.
Yes.
And we want this podcast to ignite people's passion for doing something different and putting together maybe unlikely partners, maybe likely partners. And I know there's so much we could cover because you and I talk all the time and we get really upset because there's so much we have to fill each other up on anyway. But
yes.
We decided, everybody, that we're going to focus on a particular partnership that we're working on that is going to be birthed very soon. So much of the things are in place, but it is about the future. So Mike, why don't you start with, I mean, it's corporate giants, it's utility companies, it's car manufacturers, and the list go on, because they're going to be spending billions of dollars collectively on infrastructure for electric vehicles. It's a big deal, or you can say it's a thing. So we really do have quite a story to tell. We're the poster child for how our community is putting something together in a public-private partnership. So why don't you talk a little bit about that partnership and why it matters?
Well, thank you. And I think I want to start with the bigger picture of why we do this. And you and I have talked about this extensively around why we should be focused on partnership as leadership. I think that's the entire reason we do the work we do successfully is through partnerships. Without working with you and many others, our programs wouldn't be what they are. So I wanted to start with that. And I know that's very important in your value system as well with how we do this work.
Right.
So wanted to start there. And thinking through, well, first off, I think it's important to start with how difficult the times are, incredibly difficult right now. America's living through historic times, and we need to consider everything related to racial justice and the coronavirus and of course, environmental injustice, climate change, climate action. So everything being done is based on the larger national challenges that we're going through and making sure that we take all of it into account whenever we take a project on. And whether it's a demonstration project or a new program or an expansion of a program, or as we work on a Southern Arizona Green Building Alliance and Business Alliance, I think there's so much to be done. And I'm really excited that we have positive solutions in the works. We're in a place where we can start to create bigger goals to be met and actually get there. So I wanted to start there.
I think that's a great way to start, because it's having lots of moving parts pulling in the same direction, which is something that you and I know needs to happen, because climate change has not taken a break because of COVID, to your point. It's like you and I laugh about how much we're still doing and how busy we are in spite of COVID, and how much change can come about from a Zoom call or, you know, putting together the right people to make real change happen. So why are we all so excited about this electric vehicle partnership? What does it mean, and what are some of the impacts, not the implications, but the importance and the impacts of getting together lots of players in one community to get EV charging stations installed?
Great question. And I think it's partly because we have a new administration coming in soon, thankfully, and we can work with their goals around climate action that are so desperately needed to be achieved. And we know how big of a crisis climate change is. And so thinking about it from the big picture as well, there's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity to look at how we power up the economy, and we can reduce air and climate pollution as a result, which we need to do for healthier communities and economic opportunities. So thinking through it from also an equity lens and centering equity, racial equity, and also equity of the parity of costs that need to be considered as well, so that the income challenges are addressed as well, the income inequality challenges. So all of that needs to be taken into account for us to get there and not just be working with the usual suspects, so to speak.
Right.
We need to make sure that equity is centered with income and racial gaps that are there, the racial equity gaps, and racial wealth gaps. So really important that we center all of that. And then we can do that through electric vehicles. We can do that through more clean energy-based trucks, buses, cars, and overall, it's meant to be about clean air and clean energy.
So let's go. I think we should not talk necessarily in the obscure or the abstract, but what we've done, I'd like to just go into a little bit about that, because we have a conversation going on. But there's the magnitude of the players involved is something that to me is magnificently impressive. And we decided to take action on it. So you have Tucson Electric Power, which is a huge utility company owned by an even bigger utility company. They're big. They're a big deal. And they are great community partners. And then you have the Chapman Automotive Group, which is one of the biggest car dealerships in the state of Arizona. I think they have 27 the last time I counted. So it's a big business. It's not a little business. And then you have Hotel Congress, which is at the hub of downtown. It was and it will be again. It's like the go-to place. It is. It has hotel. It has restaurants. It has places to hang out. It's always rocking pre-COVID, and it will be rocking post-COVID.
Yes.
So they're another major player. Then you have Local First. You have been the impetus behind so much of this. You have Mrs. Green's World, and I have definitely played a role.
Yes, you have.
Clear Results, which is working with the arm of TEP to do what I call the logistics planning, of which there is so much. And then who did I forget that's going to be really mad at me if I didn't bring it up? All of those groups, they're big and little, and they're green dot connectors. And the challenge for businesses like Hotel Congress, there's a cost to having an EV charging station put on your location. And Chapman is very interested because they know when you talk about the green wave or whatever, everybody in the car industry, everybody in the climate change movement, and I'm pretty much saying everybody, is talking about how we are going to move to electric vehicles and it's going to happen faster than anybody believes it will. I mean, there's a race to that finish line and billions of dollars is being spent to put charging stations in. So there's that national push and impetus, and companies with lots of money want in on the action. Clearly, it might not be an altruistic reason. So putting together this group of people, and then you involved the state of Arizona.
Yes.
So that's a huge player. So how do we make it work? Where do we put the charging stations? How do we include things like equity and inclusion? Because we care about those things. Don't just have it in, you know, the zip codes where it's going to be the highest because there's going to be trucks and other vehicles that are involved. So the state of Arizona is helping you to drive this initiative. So think about it, everybody. Press pause. You know, it's like being on a volunteer committee. But on this one, we are aligned behind the intention, and it's all about reducing carbon emissions, and it's all about facilitating the ease with which electric vehicle owners can charge. So it's been a lot of meetings, a lot of patience, a lot of financial contributions. So what do you want to expand on that? Because that's what got me excited about this podcast. We want to share with people what real public-private partnerships look like.
Exactly.
And
yes,
that's what's happening.
It's what's happening. And what we're creating locally is what I think is a global, scalable model, a national model as well. And it's about what you've just highlighted. It's that public private partnership approach that we're taking and really focused on the different resources and opportunities that we have together when combined. And strength in numbers is how I like to think of it. So everyone you name, from the state of Arizona to Tucson Electric Power and their rebate program for businesses for electric vehicles, to Chapman Automotive and Hotel Congress, to determine how to have a process in place to cover all the costs needed, especially in these very difficult times especially for local businesses, and finding a way to tie it to local business hubs so that we can create more awareness of why to go to that area to get that charging station to be supported and the local businesses to be supported. So it's multiple goals here that we are accomplishing with this approach. And I think what makes me most excited is how we bring it all together and make sure that we're not leaving any opportunity that we can really work on together. And so we can then create more cost-saving solutions. And as you were talking about, carbon emissions reductions and improving energy efficiency and transportation-related reductions. And there's so much here to cover in just one project. And I think doing this together, we're going to be able to help others know how they can do this too, potentially, if they're interested, and certainly create more demand, because demand is key if we're going to be able to do this shift together around a green economy and creating more opportunities for electric vehicles to be on the road. That demand is key as well.
It's a magic pill. And the thing that we really want to convey in this is that it hasn't been easy, but it hasn't been hard either. It's been time consuming. We have had to figure out overcoming obstacles. And that's what you and I wanted to share with everybody around the country that listens to this. So what if your hotel, part of it is on city land and it's leased for X amount of years and you put in a very expensive, or in this case, a number of EV charging stations? Who gets the revenue? How is that divided? Who gets the marketing opportunities? And it's been delightful. It's not been combative or contentious. It's been everybody sitting down with the shared intention that we want to get as many EV charging stations in Tucson as possible for our own citizens, for people that are going to be traveling much more by car now, because in a post-COVID world, everything I'm reading says that people are going to take to their cars and not as many are going to take to their planes. So we've really overcome things that, like, okay, wow, what are we going to do about this? And then we pull the partners together and we talk about it. And to me, everybody with that aligned vision is a part in moving it forward. And the personal note for me is, as most people know in Tucson, Chapman provides me with a car as part of their sponsorship of our mission. And they surprised me with an EV, an Audi SUV, that is unbelievable. And it's all electric. And I will tell you, Mike, and I said this to you, for travel in town, which I haven't been doing very much of, it's easy. But we took it, you know, we went on a long trip from Tucson, Arizona to Taos, New Mexico, and it changes the way that you travel. And believe me, every person that decided they were going to put an EV charging station on their lot, I was thanking them along the way, because it's the only way we're going to be able to get from point A to point B in the very not too distant future. I'm certainly going to see it roll out in my lifetime. So it took on a lot of personal incentive for me to get that ball rolling. So from where you sit, Mike, you read stuff every day, lots of stuff. I read lots of stuff. You have tie-ins with the state. You have tie-ins with national agendas relative to climate change and the impact. Talk a little bit more about how an initiative like this helps move the green needle forward and the CO2 emission needle backward. Talk to me about, you know, the national implications and the climate change impact for this, because that's why you and I are in it. That's why we're doing it.
Yes, thank you for that. Next step here, I think we really need to talk about the broader implications here. We basically are at, I think, the beginning of a green rush here that's going to be happening nationally. And it's important to consider, for example, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy has found that transportation has replaced the power sector as the largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the U.S. That's a big deal right there.
Big deal.
We need to take that all into account. So local governments and regions are focused more on this than ever. I'm seeing, for example, there's an Arizona statewide transportation electrification plan. There's the work of the state of Arizona to have demonstration projects like we're beginning to work on. And there are many stakeholders engaged, as we talked about Tucson Electric Power and many others, the Arizona utilities in general. And so there's definite prioritization going on around this, knowing that transportation has to be prioritized, knowing all of this information. And that way we can create more jobs as well, and also make sure that we're focused on some new challenges. Because with COVID-19, there's a severe impact on shared transportation that we have to take into account as well. That means that, unfortunately, transportation modes that are shared transportation modes are not as widely utilized. There's been a severe impact there. And that it means we're not having as much reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So there's so much that we have to take into account with where we are now, and also what has been found before. So something I wanted to mention too around why this can be done through supporting public-private partnerships like these projects that we're starting to undertake with local businesses is it can help create economic opportunities based on climate impact. And so, for example, from the EVgo website, there's some really interesting data that I know you're going to appreciate, that by having fast charging stations, that revenue can be increased. And some of the data found is that electric vehicle drivers who are needing a place to park and recharge quickly, their data found that 89% of EV drivers typically make a purchase when charging at a retail location.
And it, totally. Right? Totally. Mike, yeah. It cracks me up. Or park somewhere where you can go eat.
Like right.
Shop or eat while my vehicle's charging. It is. I am living proof. That's what we looked for.
And you can see why Local First Arizona is involved then. Not just because of our sustainability leadership.
You know, locally owned restaurant.
Right. Yeah. It ties to the local business work we've done for so long. So to be creating a inclusive and dynamic local economy, we need to consider all of these reasons for doing this kind of work. And another data point is 83% of respondents to that survey prefer to shop more frequently at locations that offer EV charging.
you and I are like the yin and the yang. I'm the excitement and the cheerleader, and you're the metrics man. And I love that. You talk about benchmarking.
Benchmarking, yes, definitely.
So many scientists say, if you can't measure it, it didn't happen. And isn't there a big, like, somebody tracking this, the Carbon Tracker Initiative or something like that,
yes,
with really taking the measurements so that we're saying, and you can say to businesses, look, here's what happened. So what do you know about that part?
That's what I want to grab next. Thanks. So there's another reason to prioritize anything with EVs as a top priority. It's because the economics are really there. They're there in a very, very beneficial way for multiple benefits for the entire community. So for example, electrifying transport reduces the cost of energy imports per vehicle by at least 90%.
Unreal. Oh my God, 90%, yeah. People press pause. I want to ring the bell.
Yeah, think about that. And the amount of local economy benefit there is significant. And then in addition, any kind of electrifying of transportation systems is meaning that there are cuts by 75% of the number of premature deaths from air pollution linked to transport.
Like, press pause on that, everybody.
Yeah, I'm going to pause on each of these.
No kidding. Like, let it sink in. Rewind what you're listening on whatever device. And, you know, I was shocked when Julia Strange from Tucson Medical Center several years ago gave me the Pima County Health Assessment Report to find that the third leading cause of death in Pima County is upper respiratory disease. So it's a thing, and it's not just in Pima County. It's around the country that have high levels of, pollution. So it's so obscure sometimes to track climate change to saving your grandmother, and I'm not kidding, I'm not trying to be funny, or saving your child who has asthma. It's all connected, and you and I sing that message and sing that song as much as we can. It's not like a little tiny, here's one issue, electric vehicle charging stations. It's all connected to the impact of climate change, the devastating impact. So when you tell me things like that as the metrics man, I think that might be your new your new nickname, but it matters to me because then I go and try to repeat it the best I can based on what you told me. So 75%, the number of premature deaths from air pollution linked to transport. So I'm highly motivated, and so are you.
Yes. And then another one, one last one to highlight for the economics is by electrifying the transportation system, we can reduce the cost to consumers by at least 2/3. So why would we not prioritize the electrification of the transportation system? It should be top priority.
We all win. And it annoys me so much when people say going green costs more money. And I'm like, people, no, you don't even get it. It's an investment in your future. It's like money in the bank.
And one more thing, I know you're going to love this too, is the Environmental Defense Fund has found that transitioning to a zero emission transportation sector will put over 1 million people to work. And then everything we're talking about, saving lives and building up the workforce here. There's so much here to make American businesses more competitive and local businesses more supported.
And the cost of healthcare is just one of the biggest burdens we have. And if we have a cleaner planet, we will have fewer people in the hospital and getting asthma treatments and using inhalers. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So this isn't shifting, this is segueing. I know that you and Kimber and Thomas and all of you wonderful people up there in Phoenix and here, you have a definite local, think globally, act locally. And I know that you're going to assess all these efforts because I know you. I've been partnering with Local First for almost a decade. So what are you going to assess and how are you going to do it? Because you are going to measure it. We are going to have good things to report. What's your plan for that?
We have a lot there to work on and already are creating the framework for it. So you mentioned metrics, and if we're going to have an equitable Arizona economy that's inclusive and diverse, dynamic, then we need to make sure that we're tracking on everything that we can. And so within this project that we're starting to develop, we want to have a framework that assesses many components of a strong local economy. So that includes certainly the climate data, benchmark data, and in addition, equity impacts, also life cycle assessment and understanding supply chains and how we can make those more localized and sustainable. And then unique community attributes. That is a critical piece of this. For me, it's a big interest in how we tell the story here around the qualitative metrics. So community health, like we're talking about, and our local reputation and what our key assets are and what is our culture of sustainability. I know that's big for you with Green Teams, but in addition, what about our history of sustainability as the Borderlands culture? And what's our community cohesion with working with those organizations and grassroots efforts that are involved with, for example, alternative transportation? How can we make connections there with electric bikes and To-Go Bike Share, for example, is a specific example. How can we consider all of the above? Car sharing is another example, like what LA has done with their car sharing program, so that we can ensure equity is a top priority within the framework.
And what I hope is that towards the end of 2021, we're back together and we will have some metrics already. And I just, what's going through my head when you're saying this is, I want to reiterate it because these are unlikely partners. And for people out there that might be in smaller communities or in bigger cities, don't think about the obstacles, think about the opportunities. Because we have a major utility company, a major car company, a local tourist treasure, a statewide local organization, Mrs. Green's World, who is part of being a movement maker, and then the state of Arizona. So it's like it's government, it's private, it's big companies, it's small companies, and it's been clear result. I want to talk to about them too, because they deserve certainly to be sitting at this table that we set for how you bring about a powerful public-private partnership and the patience that it takes and the give and take that it takes. So that's local reputation to me, that's community to me, and that's the culture of Tucson. And I'm sure there are other cities around the country that'll be happy to hear this. And it could be a city worker that works in transportation in Ohio or something that is excited and wants to connect with us about how to do that more.
And on that note, not any project's going to look the same in another community, but there's a template being created. There's a framework here that could be applied and then blurred to that unique community. So thinking about, for example, in Tucson, we fortunately have the leadership of the mayor's office, Mayor Romero's office, with the climate emergency declaration passed and the climate action planning that's ambitious, thankfully. So making sure that we link with their planning with anything we do is critical as well. And so for anyone listening out there, think about how you can connect with your local utility and local businesses and government to consider what's possible. And it may be electric vehicles. It may be another climate action related project. That I think what you're hearing today is the different pieces to take into account to ensure it's a holistic project that is community based.
And we talked a little bit about, and I'm really not going off topic. Trust me, just stay with me. It might take me a little bit to get there, but you're used to me. And I think most of our listeners are too. But I had a great conversation this week with our representative from Visit Tucson. And this is, to me, in a COVID world, they get their revenue by heads in the bed. They get it by tax money from how many people come and stay in hotels and Airbnbs and all of that in Tucson. So that's how their 90% of their revenue comes from that. It's been devastating. Do you think they're like sitting there twiddling their thumbs? They are not. It was a partnership, catch-up call. And what they're doing, because they have national intelligence that says once things do lighten up, and I mentioned this in the beginning, once some of the restrictions are lifted and the vaccine is out there in many more places, people are going to take to their cars. So Visit Tucson is positioning themselves to be a sustainable green. And I was telling Meredith, lots of charging stations because lots of people are buying electric vehicles. So it's that whole integrated approach that gets me very, very excited.
Yes, I'm following. I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, it's like it's all connected, and we are going to help because we like visitors here. And there are so many things. This is the other part of what she told me. People are going to want to do things outdoors. So money is going to shift significantly to places like Sabino Canyon and the Desert Museum and all of the places, the hiking places that we have where people can come with their families. The Loop, where you can come. I've met people on the Loop that came here from out of the state to just go on our bike loop that you can drive around the whole city without interruption or going on a city street. So all of these forces are coming together. Now, back down to earth here. There has to be more needs and more opportunities for all of these things to happen. What are some of those things? Because I don't know the mic, and I know that you do. There's more to it than just Gina Murphy Darling, Mrs. Green, being excited and happy about helping to connect people. There's real detail work, minutiae, measurements. What are some of the things that have to happen to help move it for maximum community impact? Is that a good way to ask it? Because yes. That's kind of what I want to know. What do we have to do?
Excellent question. It's something that's on my mind often, with really inspired by the work we're doing at Local First Arizona with our current sustainability programs in place. So for example, Scale Up is our sustainability project planning program for local businesses to provide more support for climate action in the community, but also be benefiting from projects that are cost saving and be able to be part of the solution. And we do that through cohorts, virtual cohorts now. We've been able to fill every quarter. We're filling cohorts of local businesses ready to take on ambitious projects related to energy and water and transportation and waste and green teams, and having a specific goal that everybody's aiming for, at least a 20% reduction in any one of those areas that they take on, or maybe even one. And so the projects are really impressive, what's coming forward. And also focused on community impact, focused on how there can be social entrepreneurship and impact involved with partnerships and considering new business models that have more of a social impact, like anything related to employee ownership, for example, is something that we highlight in the toolkit. And we highlight a lot. We have experts working with the businesses to teach them about different strategies with sustainability areas that I covered there, but also around community impact, social impact. So with that said, a lot of what's been learned from developing a more comprehensive, holistic program that is more relevant now in these times to be not just about sustainability, but community goals as well simultaneously, that's informing what we're doing with this project. And I think that's really important it's critical that we recognize that it's going to take a much more holistic approach to get more people engaged and to meet their needs, the human needs out there. We have to set all of our mindsets in the current time and place that we're in. And it's not enough just to be about the outcomes, for example. That 20% reduction goal or goals is really important for the data, but we have to center it in community, or else how are we going to get more people engaged, and how are we going to help people through this crisis time that we're in? We can't have it be one or the other. It has to be both. And so that's something I wanted to bring up, because I think it's really informed the planning around this project to look at many additional needs and opportunities to be incorporated, and to ensure that we are also helping businesses differentiate their business models so that they can be seen as a climate action leader, contributing, providing support for the community and climate action.
So I sit here really actively listening and thinking about some of the phone calls I've been on just recently about this. Is to me like you put a stake in the ground, and we're going to do something called Scale Up. And everybody who's listening, if you want to learn more about that, there'll be a link to that on the page, on our show page, so that you can just link directly to find out what that's about and find out about Local First, et cetera. But what I have seen happen is what happens with all good partnerships. You never know the unanticipated outcomes. So we just had a call this week, and the partners, the unlikely people that may have never come together because they're operating their businesses in a silo, or they're about survival, or they don't know about this other business. In that call, new partnerships were being made, resources were being shared, phone numbers were being exchanged. And to me, Mike, all roads lead to climate resilience, because the guys and the women in the know say, in order to be climate resilient, that's the thing that they're talking about now. They're not talking about adaptation and mitigation. They're talking about resilience, because climate change and its viciousness is already here. So here are these people, you know, collecting resources together, becoming stronger through capacity building, and all of the things that I have read said the survivors are going to be strong communities that share resources, that share knowledge, that really build capacity on a much smaller scale, not a bigger scale. And to me, that's what there's evidence already of that happening here with all the partners that we have involved in Scale Up. And it is scalable, and it is a national model. Like you said, everything will never be exactly the same, but the framework, the groundwork, the foundation has already been laid. And I just, you know, I get tired of saying on those calls how blown away I am to see real change happening. I sound like the cheerleader, and I'm trying to outlive that reputation from high school. My kids say, "Mom, you were a cheerleader." But it's funny to me, because I do sit back, because I'm not involved in a lot of the implementation stages, because we have a home-based business and we've done a lot. We live in a greenhouse. So kind of, except for our electric bill, which we haven't nailed that one yet. But I think you know what I'm saying. It's like you set the table with Local First leadership for people to come together that are as much as sometimes a four-person business to 600 people in a business, and finding the commonalities and the way to support each other. So to me, that's real community impact. And I don't know if you want to comment on that, because you know me, I have another question already. So
I do. I
really would like you to. Yes.
Yes. Well, and on that note of resiliency and the analogy about the stake in the ground, I appreciate that, because it's unknown territory in a lot of ways, but also based on history too, because we have to know what's already being done in our community and what has been done. And so considering what's been effective and what hasn't been and why, and how we need to, again, center diversity, equity, and inclusion with anything we're doing, that is critical. But in addition to all of that, considering that we're really working to shift to a new economy model around a human-centered, resilient, regenerative economy. And by doing that, we can ensure that we can employ circular economy strategies related to more localized supply chains that are sustainable, and ensuring that we consider the finite resources that are our reality. And we must center with everything we're doing. It should be the starting point for all conversations related to project planning and implementation, is where we actually are. We cannot sustain the old economy. And if COVID hasn't taught that, I don't know what will, because it's only going to get harder if we don't shift now.
No kidding.
And climate change is the bigger crisis ahead that's already underway.
Yeah, it is. It's already devastating. And we have been, to some degree, insulated from it until COVID hit. And now who knows what is going to come down the road, and anything we can do to build capacity to help the just millions of people that are at risk. This is all part of it, because we're building community partnerships. And you have a place like Chapman and a place like TEP. They are working rigorously to give back to the community where the greatest needs are, on the front lines and all of that. So it's
yes, they are.
You know, it's a great partnership to be a part of.
And then the support of the state of Arizona for Scale Up to be able to do that.
Yes, yes. Please talk about that a little bit. Let's not leave them out.
Well, generally, I just want to say that they've been very supportive of Scale Up for years. And now we're moving into demonstration projects that are even more ambitious and more, I think, regional and statewide based, like electric vehicle charging stations. So building off of these significant local business projects to these now larger public-private partnerships that I think, have such potential to be replicated even nationally.
And when you break that down, when you get granular or get down in the weeds, what does that mean, Mrs. Green? What are you talking about? Well, what that means and what I've seen happen is here's the fixed cost for one EV charging station, which Clear Results has figured out. There's partners that they work with that they get, you know what the charge is. So then you bring all of these people to the table and TEP has an incentive to offset some of the cost. The Chapman Automotive Group knows that they're a lot more able to help contribute financially than a hotel and restaurants in one location. So they're willing to chip in and cover some of the costs. And you see things like that happening and it gets distributed and it makes it doable overcoming those obstacles, because I dare say without this partnership, there would not be a plan for as many EV charging stations as we're talking about just with this one partnership. So it's like sharing the cost and ultimately sharing the benefit because it's the right thing to do. It's been amazing for me to watch. Everybody's willing to do a little bit more to make it happen.
Right. And also the knowledge gained, right? What are the gaps out there? And
yes.
Also what's possible as a result when we have that many partners at the table, we can and also consider how we can bring more partners in as one of the questions so that we are making sure this is a holistic project and not just about the outcome of an electric vehicle charging station, right? So considering other needs and opportunities that could get connected to the project location as a local business hub and the surrounding site as well. There's so many possibilities to consider. Just naming a few, we could be thinking about anti-idling and we can be thinking about bike share and car sharing.
Huge. Both of those. Huge.
All of that, right? And purchasing incentives and telework programs that get connected with incentives and transit-oriented development and vehicle maintenance needs so that there's the parity being considered with costs. And there's so much to consider when we really think about it all. And I didn't even get into energy efficiency and the buildings that can get connected for smart grids and it goes on.
I know,
on.
The list goes on. We're going to be doing more of these podcasts. I guarantee it.
We're going to need to. There's stories to be told as we keep developing one project to the next. Each one will have its unique attributes, and we'll definitely want to make sure that we talk about the why. You know, the why we brought the partners together based on an opportunity, thanks to TEP's leadership with the incentive program, to even get this going as quickly as we have.
No kidding.
And then to have the state of Arizona's leadership to support the additional cost needs for local businesses to get there.
And there's another thing that's harder to pinpoint, but that is it's almost like the essence of what's in it for me. Me, Gina Murphy, darling, Mrs. Green, I talk to you a lot and there have been some really dark days. I mean, I was so sad that I couldn't have my 70th birthday party. It ended up being a magical week with my family. So it was better, okay? So that was one of them. But there are times, like we got alerts yesterday from our health department about staying home, and we got an email from one of our major healthcare providers, Tucson Medical Center, coming from nurses begging people to stay home and mask up because of how overtaxed they are. It's dire. What David said, our friend David, on the call is, this is creating energy. And he said, and I'm not talking about kilowatt hours. It's an energy that is exciting, that is affirming, that makes people want to be, have what we're having and get on this exciting train. And it was a very thoughtful comment from him about, in these challenging times and dark days and dark nights, this is what keeps me excited, ignited, wanting to more passionately commit to these changes. So I hope you at some point take a big deep breath and give yourself a big pat on the back or ask Cassie to do it. And it's not funny. It's like, it's real. It takes leadership. But I loved that comment. This is about good energy and we need that. We need to pull us forward. It really is.
I'm really glad you brought it up, because actually I was going to bring that up. So we're thinking alike here.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up that it is about the collective energy. Like I said, strength in numbers. And I think the quote from David Eisenberg was brilliant because he said it's not about energy efficiency per se, it's or solar or renewables. It's all of it. But he was saying it's about all of us coming together.
It is.
It's our collective energy that will make this all happen and make this shift happen because we know it's needed, critically needed.
Right.
But we also know it's more than that. It's not just about the crisis, but it's about how we help more people as a result. And we know from the research that the underserved communities are going to be harder hit and already are with air pollution and COVID-19. Of course, everything there, the data, it's heartbreaking. And we need to consider where we center all this work. And I just want to keep coming back to that. And how, of course, with what we're talking about, how local businesses play that role related to climate change. It's evident across regions and in sectors across our economy, important to our society and its future. So thinking about human health and food security, water supply, transportation, energy, ecosystems. I know you know all this. And I want our listeners today to think about this, that we're all part of the solution. We have to create systems change. And we have to do this now. And that by doing that, we're going to create a better future. And it will get better, but it means we have to change. And we have to learn from what's happening right now and what's been happening for too long.
And we're doing it, Mike. That's the thing. We're doing it. We're not just talking about it. And that's what excites me. We are in the implementation stage, not the dream building stage. And it keeps moving forward. I want to go back to something you said in the beginning, which gave me a rush. And you might want to hashtag this, and we might too. But you talked about, with the new administration, a green rush that's coming. And I have a friend that's on the transition team. He won't tell me anything. He just says, Gina, you're going to be really excited about the climate focus in this new administration, and you're excited about it. Does your crystal ball say there really is going to be a green rush and that we're going to really accelerate some of the changes for the ground we've lost in the past 4 years? Because it has been devastating. And that's not a political statement. That's a scientifically based factual loss of habitat, loss of national forest land, loss of, you know, the beat goes on.
Yes.
So what's your crystal ball for the green rush, Mike?
It's definitely that there will be one. I see the data. I see the leadership happening in Arizona right now alone. And what we're seeing with the planning coming forward from this administration already and how they've named climate change, climate action is key to their administration and the work they'll be doing. I think we should hashtag that gold green rush.
I do. Hashtag green rush. It's happening. Talk to your social media people.
Yeah, to say it's happening, I should. same, we both should. And I was thinking too that it's not just about calling it a green rush. I mean, it's going to be a green sprint. We have to have it be that way. And I think that the pieces are in place for it. We certainly haven't learned enough, though. It's been in the U.S., I mean, globally, the investments have been much greater with COVID recovery efforts, with green investments tied to recovery and not here in the U.S. So that's concerning to me. I want to name that and ground us in where we are right now in the U.S. And so it's not guaranteed by any means, but I think that we can make it happen if we all demand it as consumers and we vote with our dollars. And going back to the mission of Local First, I think consider this, because this is all about what we do here. It's to build equitable systems for our local businesses and our communities and create that vibrant, inclusive, and sustainable Arizona economy.
And it's just, you know, all of these things that we hear that don't really give enough focus or importance or whatever, I don't know what, to the importance of the role that local businesses play. Like, I'm signing every petition I possibly can to give some more relief money to restaurants. And the reason I'm doing that is because I love them. It's not just all noble on my part. It's I love locally owned restaurants. Who doesn't like the thought of Cheers, where everybody knows your name and they say, hi, Gina, hi, Mike.
Right.
And
exactly.
So there's a sweet spot. There's that cultural association. But there's real important money involved in this conversation where these local businesses are the bread and butter of our community in every way. So it's selfish and it's selfless to try to make sure that they get some relief like we gave to the banks and the automobile industry, the big dogs. So these small businesses collectively represent a lot more than that, and we need to do it. And I, you know, one of the, so when I'm doing these things, something nags at me, like, who did I forget? And how could I forget Helene Tack, who is part of your team, who has done so much and has been a champion of the underdog in every way. So I spouted off some names. I wanted to make sure you know that I gave her the right amount of praise and just so much respect. So,
and I also want to thank my team. And
oh my God, Claire, she may never be my friend anymore. I mean, seriously.
I want to close with that I couldn't do this without a dynamic team.
They are amazing.
To do this kind of dynamic work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, the visionary leadership of Kimber Lanning and Thomas Barr. We couldn't do this without
them. No kidding.
Them.
It's the truth.
So, yeah, I'm really lucky.
And they give you such a wide berth. Yeah. Nothing but support.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we did that because I don't think I thank my team enough either. I thank them personally and they know it. But when people say, look what you've done, I'm like, yeah, look at the people standing by my side because nothing great ever happens without a team, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Ever.
Exactly.
Ever.
So big shout out to Helene, to Claire, to Nick, to Kelly.
All these people. And Kelly, yes, they're just delightful.
Yes. And everyone at Local First, because it's a statewide team and we couldn't do it without each other. So we've been able to really thrive in these times by being responsive from day one. And we just keep going. We don't stop.
We'll just stop cooking things up for a little bit.
Maybe they'll take a little break over the holidays, but definitely there's so much need out there and we know it. And we want to make sure that our local businesses can thrive in the future. So it means we have to just keep doing everything we can.
Give your big brain a break.
And one more shout out to everyone to please shop local. Please vote with your dollars.
Yes.
Any day of the week. And especially green businesses, of course, sustainable businesses, but any local business that you can support and shift your dollars from non-local to local is critical, especially now. I've said this before. It's not a cliche to say it's needed now more than ever.
I agree. We have a big presence of used bookstores here. And it's Bookman's. And if you call them, they'll look for the book and they'll do curbside delivery.
Yes.
So that's what local businesses will do.
Exactly.
It's just amazing. I mean, Target's doing it too. So the big businesses are helping too. But anyway.
It's amazing local businesses are doing that.
Yeah, it really is. I'm like, what? You do curbside? That's good because I'm not allowed to go in. So I think I feel complete. I want to make sure you do that your points.
We covered all the points I wanted to cover. Thank you.
We had fun, passionate fun.
We did.
So as with all Mrs. Green's World shows, I get the last word and I love that. And sometimes I wonder if I should write it down or if I should speak from my heart. So this is kind of a combination of both so that I keep on track and my talking points. And I don't want to embarrass my very good friend on national radio, but I do want to say that Mike Peel is all that. And I'm getting just a little bit emotional and I'm proud of it. More people should show their emotions like I do. And I stand by that proudly. But Mike has a passion for preserving this planet that is second to none that I have ever seen. And this podcast is illustrative of that. He dreams up ways to impact entire communities and then goes about gathering the troops to make real change happen. All change which benefits communities and the planet. Mike delivers. If he says he's going to do something, guess what? He does it, even if it comes at 11:59 p.m. when he said it would happen that day. He keeps saying yes. He keeps saying, stepping up to be a planet protector because he has a very firm grasp of the clear and present dangers of climate change right now and the devastating impact that people and communities are feeling and living and suffering from right now. And trust me when I say the world needs more Mike Peels if we have any chance of winning the climate change battle. So here's my call to action. If you got as much out of this podcast as I did, of our spending our time together, of the energy that we hopefully created, share this podcast with a friend or family member or coworker, because you never know. Someone you share it with might just be the next Mike Peel. And Mike doesn't want other Mike Peels. He wants single, single successes with their own names, but you know what I mean. There has to be a metaphor that I can explain it. Or they just might start making changes in their lives, in their communities, or their workplace. And you can be a part of the solution by simply taking that one step, and I really hope you do. So, Mike, thanks for being in my life. Thanks for doing this podcast. And thanks for all you do to make our world a better, safer, healthier, and more socially just place to be. I am honored to be able to call you my friend.
Thank you, Gina.
So,
likewise.
It's just, it's like a love fest. It's really pretty cool. We really definitely charge each other up. And my final thanks always is to you. You've got it, our listeners, because without you, there would be no us. Thank you so much for being a part of my world. Thanks, Mike. Thanks to our sound engineer, who I don't thank nearly enough, Dave Lebreck and Kelly King, who makes all this magic happen, and all the rest of the MGW team that is there to make us all go forward. So happy New Year, everybody, and let's make it matter.